Let me just start by saying that Jean had picked our summer series umbrella. And when she picked it, I thought, oh, that's so great because it's so broad and everything under the sun could fit under that umbrella. And then it came time for me to start thinking about what I was going to write. And I thought, what the heck? Why did she pick this? This is so hard. So I myself am very surprised by what came out from the exercise of thinking about what is my purpose. And I would encourage all of you to take pen in hand and give it a try and see what comes out for yourselves. To define one's purpose is no easy task. Ironically, my daughter had asked me just the other day, what was the purpose of life? And that provided me with a unique opportunity to test out my theories about life's purpose on her. And so I told her, as I am going to tell you, that I believe the purpose of life is to do your best. When I told her this, she rolled her eyes, and she said, that's a mom answer. I know I'm supposed to do my best, but what's the point? Is there a point to this? Oh, okay, so now here is the real question. Hearing her ask, what is the point, brought me right back to one of my most vivid childhood memories. I was 5, I was in kindergarten, and I had just spent time with my very Catholic grandmother. She spent the entire time I was with her lecturing me on angels. She told me that angels are real. I learned all about Michael and Gabriel and Lazarus. And then she dove into her own personal mythology that modern angels are babies and children who have passed on. And that is why every time you see them in art, they're wearing diapers. It's important to note that my grandmother did lose a child when she was in childbearing years, and she had lost several siblings in her lifetime. So I could certainly understand where this ideology came from. What my grandmother did next, though, was she connected her lecture on angels with my own goodness, and she informed me that angels were always watching me. And even if I couldn't see them, they were there, and they knew what I was up to. So I always had to be on my best behavior. She shared a very specific example that if I did not demonstrate good behavior, for example, fighting with my brother, then I was going to be damned for eternity and spend the rest of my life in hell. This was a lovely message for a 5-year-old. And I'm sure you can imagine this set up a really dangerous internal conflict. As most of you know, I work with children, and anyone who's around children knows that conflict is part of growing. Conflict with siblings is probably one of the most inevitable things in a child's life. So it was just a mere hour later that my brother and I got in a fight, and I was told I was going to hell. Fast forward a few hours later, and I'm back home, and I'm sitting on my mother's lap, and I'm sharing with her my thoughts about what happened at my grandmother's. One of my first questions to her, and I really, this is one of those flashbulb memories, it's so vivid to me, was, are bulls real? Bulls, asked my mother. Yes, bulls, I said. Grandma says angels are real, but I can't see them. And I've never seen a bull, so I wonder if they're real like dogs or real like angels. One of the things that I do cherish about my mother is she never, ever laughs at me, no matter what my ideas or thoughts are. So she took my question very seriously. Meg, there are many things in this world that you will never see, but you will need to find out for yourself what is real and what is not. So angels are real? I tested. Well, I'll tell you this, my mother said. I've never seen one, but I've never seen a real bull either. And while I do believe in a bull, I don't believe in angels. And then she got very serious. She said, I want to make something perfectly clear to you, and that is that no child ever goes to hell. It was said with such authority and conviction, I knew even at 5 that there had to be more to it. So I pressed, Mom, do you believe in hell? Yes, I do, but it is not your grandmother's version. It is not a fiery pit below the earth, but it is right here and right now. Her comments and her conviction frightened me, but I pressed on. Mama, what happens to us when we die? And looking right into my eyes, my mother did not miss a beat in replying, no matter what they tell you, no one knows. These are probably the most formative words ever spoken to me. I remember the impact of her words and the immediate empty feeling that they created inside of my heart. No matter what they tell you, translation, trust no one. No one really knows. Translation, we are all lost without a compass. Something broke inside of me that moment, and it was my sense of security. Immediately after that incident, my mother moved out of my house, and my parents got divorced. My world was turned upside down, and I did, in fact, spend many years lost without a compass to guide me. In my adolescence, how this translated was that I was crippled by a fear of dying. I couldn't read a book in which people died. I couldn't hear the news because they spoke about death. I couldn't even listen in school to anything concerned with things that may result in death. Even hearing the word die, even casually on the street, would cause my head to swim and swirl, my stomach to turn, my breathing to get faster, and my skin to flush. I had no idea at that age what a panic attack was, but I was having them daily. And because my mother had unknowingly taught me that no one could be trusted, I suffered in silence. I worked incredibly hard to mask my fears and to pretend that everything was normal. And this only further confirmed for me that my mother's words were truth, because here I was suffering each and every day, and no one knew because I was capable of acting with confidence. And if I was acting, then everyone else around me must be acting, and therefore we must all be liars. Had I been a different kid in a different time, things would have turned out very differently for me. But I was blessed to grow up in this community. I am forever grateful that this was where I was raised. It would have been so easy for me to turn to destructive behaviors to numb myself from this discomfort, but all around me, wherever I looked, were role models. There were caring adults. There were invested teachers. People who would not give up on me, people who saw something in me, and people who would not let me linger forever in my dark places. Everywhere I looked were pictures of healthy and secure life. And eventually, with that constant exposure to this other way of thinking, a different narrative imprinted itself on my heart. Yes, it still seemed true that no one had the answer about what happened to us after we die, but unlike the place I was trapped in, where this was something to be afraid of, I started to realize that this was the point of it all. If I don't know what happens in the future, then all I can do is be here in the present. If there is only now, then why am I wasting my time being sad, angry, hurt, jealous about tomorrow? Why not live my best today? I am not in any way saying that this was an easy philosophy to adopt. There are plenty of days in which I'm aware how absolutely terrifying and horrible things are for people, for the environment, for the world at large. And many times those things are terrible and horrible for me. But unlike the past, where I would close into myself, I would be afraid, and I would trust no one, now, when confronted with the days that are hard, I reach out for support. I seek others who may have had similar experiences. I ask how they got through it, and I rely on my support network, and I live. Early on in my experiences coming to this church, Reverend Jim gave a sermon about the lessons he had learned about ministering to the dying. I remember with a lot of hesitation walking into the sanctuary. I was terrified of what I was going to hear and terrified that my carefully, earned sobriety, if you will, about death was going to be triggered by his sermon and I would be launched right back into those dark days. As I listened, however, I was amazed at how I was able to recognize all of the places that would have in the past triggered me and been incredibly painful, but now felt like calls to action. Places where I previously would have cringed or cried or railed against it now felt safe and secure. Jim reminded us that we are all stardust. I confirmed for myself that my purpose was to live each day to the fullest. What I now understand, clear as anything, that there is only one constant, and that constant is that someday, sometime, we're going to die. Now, my sincere wish for every single person is that this happens after a very long life filled with much happiness and love. But regardless, this is the one inevitable that I'm aware of. I used to think that this was the worst thing that could happen to anybody. I started to see a therapist when I was a teenager who used hypnosis to treat my phobias and my panic attacks. And she had made a suggestion to me that I perhaps confront my phobia head on. And she recommended to me that I become a hospice care volunteer. With her help, I decided I would do this. And I thought it would be a good next step to freeing myself. So I signed up, and without any fanfare, they put me with my first friend. Her name was Helen, and she was 80 years old, and she was suffering from bladder cancer. Her family lived in a different state, and she was all alone. She was also a Jehovah's Witness, and her nurses told me that she seemed most at peace when hearing from someone who read The Watchtower. Now, I had no idea what The Watchtower was, and I didn't even know what Jehovah's Witnesses were, but I could see that Helen was hurting, and I wanted to do anything I could to ease her pain. I would have sworn I was not in aversion therapy, but taking a person who is phobic about death, surrounding her with people on their deathbed, and having her read from periodicals about Armageddon was about as extreme an example of aversion therapy as you could get. It was obviously inevitable that Helen was going to die. But something miraculous happened for me, in that when her death came, I saw it as a blessing rather than as a curse. She was released from the pain. She was released from her isolation, and she was released from her inability to live the life that she wanted. I finally understood what people meant when they said that death could bring peace. I worked with 5 more people, and I watched them all transition from this plane to the next. And I finally understood what my mother meant all those years ago when she said that hell is right here and right now. And from that moment, I vowed that I was not going to take a single day for granted. I was going to find peace in living this life here and now. So that's when my purpose was defined: to live each day with as much grace and positivity as possible, and to never take for granted that this may be my one shot. When I get frustrated with people, which is a lot, when I want to yell at them, which I want to do a lot, when I want to knock somebody down a peg, when I feel self-righteous and entitled, instead of going on Facebook, instead of picking a fight with my friends or my family, instead of punishing or blaming my kids, I acknowledge that I feel this certain way. I acknowledge that these are human feelings, and I take the time to try and understand where I am in that moment. It's not foolproof. Trust me, I get mad, I get sad, I get angry, I can be aggressive, I still yell. But now I'm aware that there is no point to being upset for the long term. There's no point in hanging on to that pain, because tomorrow may never come. It seems fatalistic, perhaps, but I found that being aware that I am mortal has helped me to live a much more joyous and fulfilled life. So back to my daughter's question of what's the point, I have come to know that the point for me is to enjoy the time that I have and to love as deeply and compassionately as possible. My purpose today and every day is to do my best, to put good into this world, And just like all the mothers and fathers and teachers who were I was exposed to in my childhood taught me to be a role model for those who know me. Simply put, my purpose is to be here now, and to be here together.